Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 85 for April 16th, 2008. You look Mac today. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations.
Okay, rock and roll.
It's time. I've been gone 2 weeks and my timing's off. That's all. It's time.
It's a move.
It's time for MacBreak Weekly, episode 85, and I've been gone for 2 weeks. Thank you to Mr. Lindsay, who held down the fort, and now he's gone at NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, where Apple is also gone. I don't know why he went there. Well, I guess because he, you know, is interested in broadcasting stuff. That's where Scott Bourne is as well. But fortunately, the comedy duo, the comedy stylings of Merlin Mann and Andy Iannacco are here, and I'm just going to sit back and enjoy. Merlin Mann has a new podcast. We'll talk about that. Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hey, Andy. He's not going to say anything now.
Oh, he's nervous. Right. You got him. You scared him.
Because every time I had something I thought interesting to say during the light banter that we have before we start podcasting, that's when you'd start like recording and then you'd yell at me for like messing up your recording.
I never yelled. I started and then I would stop.
You were thinking yelling. There was a resonance in the universe that I could detect that had the same energy signature as Leo Laporte being miffed.
No.
I think we should do a two-act. You and me, Andy, we should do a two-act as the Step On It Brothers because we're always stepping on everybody else's.
No, thing. We all do. And it's kind of, you know, to be honest, it's not our fault. It's Skype. I mean, you just can't. That's the way Skype is kind of messed up that way.
Yeah.
And Andy, there is not an angry bone in my body. I love both of you guys. I missed you when I was in Australia. And by the way, you've got huge fans all over Australia. Well, I can't say all over because I was only in Tasmania.
Well, see, I'm not making stuff up. When I claim to be internationally beloved.
Oh, yeah.
Now, granted, all I got to do is find one guy in Canada who's willing to send me a postcard testifying to that. But still, that's international support.
It's modest. It's modest evidence, but it's real.
But I am. I have to admit, I think I'm going to start calling you the wombat.
Me?
Yeah, you're wombat-like. Did you know that?
I'm wombat-like.
You want to know what a wombat looks like?
I'm hoping you'll explain this. I don't know exactly how bad to get, but I just want to dial it.
I'd have mixed emotions if I were you, Andy. I'm not sure I'd want to know.
Wombats are super cool and super cute. Go to my blog, leoville.com. Click the blog link, and there's a picture of a wombat on the second posting down, the one that says, no wuckin' furries, which is Australian for everything's cool, man. I learned a lot of strain.
That's a light spoonerism.
It's a very light spoonerism.
Okay.
See the wombat?
I see cool-looking furries. I see some guys playing what looks like, is it like lawn bowling?
Yeah, lawn bowling. And then there's me taking a picture of a wombat, and then there's the wombat picture that I took.
I see a picture of you taking a picture of Andy, and then I see a... My God, it's huge. Is it really that big?
They're big. They're basically the size of dogs, small dogs.
It looks like a baby bear.
They're the cutest thing. They're cuddly. I think that's where the idea for stuffed animals came from, wombats.
That is cute.
And they're really cute. And so we snuck up on this wombat, right? Because they're a little skittish. They don't know about humans. And so we tiptoed around and I got in front of him, started taking pictures, and he looks up. They're kind of oblivious. Because, well, look at the size of his eyes. So, and his ears, he has no senses. So he looks up and can kind of hear this clicking camera because we're being very quiet. And he starts to lumber towards me. And I'm saying to my guide, Do they bite? Is this safe? Am I in trouble? There's a large rodent coming towards me.
It's amazing what a difference the scale makes, because in my head, I'm thinking this thing's the size of a kitty cat.
No.
When it's this big, it's menacing.
They're like small pigs, yeah.
Although it would be difficult you know, in later life to have to admit that the wombat had outfoxed you, because it looks kind of like it's not going to leap out and attack you, but it realizes that, gee, that guy's kneeling right at the gravel on the side of a road. Yeah. If I lunge a little bit, he'll fall backwards exactly. Right into the path of a motorcycle.
That's exactly
and then
right.
And then he'll have to tell everybody the reason why he walks funny is because he got taken out by a wombat.
The wombat is made somewhat less threatening by the fact that he still has a piece of grass on his nose from where he was eating. He's got a little food left on his face. Anyway, I'm back. And did anything happen in the Mac world while I was gone?
Yes, that purple cloud of insanity that once descended upon Silicon Valley and Apple has descended upon the denizens of a small company who seems to think that they can clone Macintoshes.
What?
It's good to see that purple cloud of insanity back again. It has a fruity flavor that I found much to my liking.
So this was the first thing Steve Jobs did when he came back to rescue Apple from the clutches of Gil Emilio and his ilk, was kill the clones.
Yeah, and it was a stupid enough idea when it was being done with the authority and permission of Apple. How many times have you seen a press release or a defiant manifesto by a company saying, oh, I know we're doing this without authorization by Apple, but what can they do about it? Sure, we have a tool that lets you put iTunes content on an iPod without having to use the iTunes software. But hey, what is Apple going to do? Make a really simple and insubstantial change to the format that costs our $50 product to stop working?
You're talking about
the hell they?
You're talking about SciStar? Is that what you're talking about? And the open computer?
Yes, exactly. Also, they had to. This is how on the ball they are. They originally had a computer that had the word Mac in the name.
Whoops!
Until their mom or somebody with more common sense than, say, a broken shoelace, told them that, well, I see a problem already. If you put the word Mac in the product title, even if it's just a processed cheese product, you know Apple's going to sue you. So already you're done before you even start. And now that they've changed it to open computer, and it's actually sort of an interesting way to pitch a piece of hardware. It's a computer that you can install anything on, Linux, Windows, Mac, whatever. And okay, that's kind of interesting. But then you get to, again, the problem of, well, the thing is, you really need to see an Apple sticker on the box before you can install the software on there.
Well, a couple of things came up. You know, Wired.com wrote an article in which a lawyer said, well, you know, the EULA does say you're supposed to put it on an Apple machine, but these are weaker agreements than others. This lawyer said, there's basically no way to enforce the EULA. He agreed with you that Apple would probably fight back by just changing its code.
Yeah, well, it's curious because it seems to, my understanding has always been that it's never just a box you install software on, that there's you need to do some sort of serious mojo to bamboozle the operating system into thinking that it is running on some sort of Apple approved hardware. And there have been, if you search on YouTube, you can find people who almost the moment that the Intel compatible version of the OS came out, managed to boot it on a Sony Vaio or something like that. But that's not an ongoing, that's not something you would buy, build, and use as an ongoing thing. So it kind of inspires you to get a little bit baroque about how you think, what do you think SciStar is up to, including the idea, considering that all the talk has been about how they don't think that the EULA is really enforceable, whether or not this is sort of a red herring just to sort of provoke that kind of a legal action so that they can maybe put that little wedge into the EULA and then come out with the real thing that they want to do.
Interesting, because the Infinite Loop blog, Chris Forsman writing at Ars Technica, actually asked Woz the Wombat Wozniak. Now there's a guy who really does look like a wombat, come to think of it. And Woz, once again, kind of building bridges between him and Steve Jobs, says, I kind of like it. He says, I need another tower. I like the price. I may get one. He says, I'm sure that when Apple went Intel, they included copyright code in a ROM that is necessary. But Woz thinks it won't work in the long term because you have a right to run Mac software. This is interesting. I don't know. Woz is not exactly a lawyer. You have a right to run Mac software on any non-Apple computer, but you don't have the right to copy codes that are built into Apple hardware. So you're stuck. He says, add a tweak to Leopard, breaks compatibility. And Apple isn't, after all, under any obligation to preserve compatibility with non-Apple hardware.
Is there any evidence at all that this is anything but a kind of pulled out of the butt prank?
It sure sounds like it.
I mean, yeah. Just down to, like, I just kind of lightly browsed this because it sounded like kind of a weird story, but the they're tracking this down, and it's got a residential address now for the company. Yeah. And
look at the pictures of it. They say they're going to sell this thing for $400. I don't even think you could do the Chrome for $400.
Well, I mean, well, I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, so this is a company that has a website, and we know how hard it is to get a domain name and a website. Once you have that, so where is there anything, a press version of this, something that anybody could look at? It? I mean, there's not even screenshots.
Saying this is another Art Lebedev.
I when you say that it's something like trying to provoke something legally with the EULA, I don't think it's even that well thought out. It just seems mostly like somebody's, you know, pulling a gag, and it's not even particularly interesting or funny. I don't know. That's just what it seems like to me.
Nobody's seen that.
I wouldn't call it a gag. It doesn't have the form of someone who's trying to see what they can, what, how well, how many
it does
they,
if they're not funny.
Well, that's just a gag. Not a gag.
I think your sense of humor is so heavily developed that you'll find humor in places where it doesn't exist. And I don't know. I'm just, is this kind of like when you go to a swap meet? And you buy a nut and a bolt for a dollar, and they throw in a free beer. Is that the idea here? Quonk, quonk. They'll never figure that out.
Is that what they do in Florida?
Good luck, law. I have come up with a perfect airtight system for selling beer.
Have a nut and a bolt, and we'll throw in the beer.
So you're saying that it arrives at your house, and it's, you know, it's packed with guns and ammo? Like eating firearms.
Like, you know, sort of like, are you stuff, you know, and you got to like be really careful to not let the GNU touch the other part of the software. Like, different install. Is that the idea here? Like, it arrives in different boxes from different addresses, and it's there, but you've got to figure out what to do with it.
That happens all the time. The Newegg does that with the OEM versions of Windows. You know, the Windows Media Center, when that was supposed to be only sold to OEMs. You would have to buy a little bit of hardware from Newegg to get the Windows Media Center edition.
Well, like a USB cable or something?
Yeah. Oh, now you're an OEM. You must be building a machine. It's legal.
Congratulations on your reseller account.
Exactly. So it does actually happen all the time. I don't know if, you know.
Well, it is kind of interesting. If you look at the, quote, press release, unquote, the information that's on the site, they do make a big, bold point about, hey, and if you buy a copy of Leopard with it, we will pre-install it for you so it arrives ready to go.
For $155.
Yeah. Thus, maybe indicating that there might be more to installing Leopard on this thing than simply slapping a disk inside.
Okay. Well, that's Hackintosh. That's been going on for ages.
Yeah. And that actually might be an interesting way around it. If every time they build one of these, they know exactly how to get around whatever Apple has put in to stop it. And it comes with a big sticker on the front tray saying, okay, we've disabled automatic system updates. You may want to get familiar with the cancel button, because the moment you click okay and install an update, it's going to be kind of pretty, but it's not going to actually run Mac software anymore. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
This just seems like one of those really backwards, I mean, with all deference to the people who keep up with Linux. I mean, somebody who's a Linux person figures out how to like keep all these different pieces sewn together. Somebody like me, who's much more Catholic in their approach to computing, enjoys somebody like Apple because they do all the heavy lifting for me.
Right.
I mean, I'm the first one to tell you that I may be a nerd, but I'm not a geek. I don't, there's, you know, at least with regard to like hardware, like there's no way I could do stuff like kernel update stuff. I have no desire to do that at all. So I guess I'm just not sure, apart from the proof of concept and prank idea, who in a business context or personal context could this conceivably be useful to?
We're also kind of assuming that this is a serious business undertaking. It's possible that this is just a couple of grad students who just had this little part-time project. They decided to throw together a website, and they did not know that someone would find it and link the hell out of it. And now these two guys who are hoping to build a couple of boxes and get some beer money are now...
Yeah, you know, that's like throwing a water balloon at Hitler, though. You know what I mean? The fun is going to be very short-lived.
You should never throw water balloons at Hitler. No. All you wind up with is a wet, angry Hitler. That's what my grandfather said to me one day.
I thought that was just my grandfather. That must have been conventional wisdom in the 30s and 40s.
Well, you know, they lived through that. You know, if anyone, you know, has the presence of mind to know exactly how dangerous a wet Hitler is when cornered.
That's why they call them the moistest generation.
Daniel. Daniel Dilger writing in is roughly drafted. About this is the first time I've actually heard of this happening. Back to my Mac actually worked. You know about Back to my Mac?
No, I don't believe it. I think this is the same people who are doing the fake Mac. I don't believe that it works outside the local network at all.
It's a clever idea. You put this thing on your Macintosh, and it waits until the if your computer is stolen, it waits until well, wait a minute. Now, okay, let's okay. So here's what happened. I'm sorry. I was thinking of another product. This is back to my Mac, the program that never works for anybody.
It's a dot Mac, and it incorporates a dynamic DNS like.
Actually,
ability.
I used back to my Mac the other day to log into the computer up in Vancouver that we used to use for the lab, and it worked. And I was able to see all the stuff they were doing, and then I immediately logged off because I realized.
Isn't it kind of like the fiat of dot Mac functionality? Like when it does work, you're kind of surprised.
Yeah, but I've had it work. I had it work from Australia to my home computer.
Yeah. I keep wishing that would work. I could so
I think
totally
it works
use
now. Try it.
Mm. All right.
I think it works.
It really. It really.
I mean,
does
for what it exposes for the potential security stuff that it opens up, it better be really working well.
Yeah. Think about
you know
that.
What I mean,
think about that.
I mean, like if it doesn't work for me and it does work for somebody else, like I leave it shut off.
You have to open. I think it works with my home computer because I'm using an AirPort Extreme, which
me
probably
too.
Opens those ports.
You got to go in and in your AirPort Extreme, there's a little bit you flip to say allow.
Okay. It's okay.
Under the under the I think settings.
You really do have to go and to go to support.apple.com and download a really oddly long and Windows-like installation guide that will help you figure out exactly why it's not able to communicate outside your home network. And it really is a lot easier for using, as usual, an Apple branded access point. Because so much of the stuff that has to be done hands-on in a very fiddly way can be done with just a couple of clicks if you're using AirPort Extreme or a compatible a machine like that. I mean, and I'm with you. I mean, it would be great if this were as reliable as nearly everything else that Apple does with the networking. But before I left for Colorado, I was setting up back to my Mac because I still don't have a really good secure connection to post things for my blog and do stuff like that. And for God's sakes, you're on a college campus. And I talked about this last week. You really have to bastard proof your machine before you use any sort of a public internet access on a college campus. And unfortunately, it worked great inside the house, did not work great outside the house. One of the simplest things that Apple could do, and I'm not even aware that they have this yet. I'm surprised they don't, is that a simple way that right there from your LAN, you can just simply go into a simulation mode to say, well, please pretend that these two machines are not on the same network. Try to go to Venezuela, connect to an Apple computer in Venezuela, then from the Apple computer in Venezuela, try to connect back to my Mac. I want to be able to verify that whatever my settings are, that I've got them going okay, so that I can trust this connection when I leave the house.
I totally agree with you. I was really kind of counting on that for a recent trip, because what I should have done probably is go down to the coffee shop.
Test
and
it first,
see it.
Yeah.
But,
so here's what happened. This woman in Santa Cruz had her truck was broken into. The thief stole her iPhone and her MacBook. So she has a friend who says, well, you know, let's try back to my Mac. And so they were able to use it to locate the MacBook. Turns out the guy has logged on to various Wi-Fi signals and they've been able to start screen sharing sessions to see what he's doing. He's got LimeWire open. He's downloading Final Cut Pro and Photoshop. He's ripping DVDs.
Wow.
Yeah. They continue to track him. Within a couple
sounds
of days,
like he, sounds like he might be employing Apple's new eye evidence generator.
I think so. Within a couple of days, the owners are able to assemble a full profile of information on the stolen laptop user as he signed into a hookups sites, read his Gmail messages, and shopped on eBay for a police scanner. They got his birth date, his mother's maiden name, email address, his Comcast IP address. They used Photo Booth to take a picture of him. Clear enough to read the lettering on his tattoos. Santa Cruz police have initiated a warrant and subpoena process. They hope to bag the burglar and return the stolen equipment shortly. This is from the Roughly Drafted magazine, Daniel Dilger. I love the story.
Yeah, see, unfortunately, all these really funny, stupid burglar stories, they're going to get less and less easy to really get the joke. It used to be, oh, well, someone like left his driver's license and his credit card and took his picture at a photo booth right there at the bank. You know, those are going to be less likely. Well, you know, but unfortunately, the guy was not using had hijacked a DNS server, but he forgot. You're going to love this. He was only modifying every third header. So by unwinding the IP address, we're able to subnet him all the way back to that. You know, exactly. And a lot of people just sort of, oh, of course. Forgetting to dynamically subnet.
Dumb. How dumb can you get?
Is this the right place where I laugh so they don't think that I don't know what you're talking about?
What is he saying?
America's stupidest identity thieves.
Now, hey, who knows? You know, and when my kids grow up, they may be so savvy that that is something they can laugh about. I'm sure our parents are wondering what the hell we're laughing about.
Oh, this is going to be a ridiculously huge problem. I mean, the amount of the resources that are available to work on crimes like this are so out of whack to the way that it's growing. I mean, stuff like obviously laptops. I mean, you hear all these apocryphal stories about people just walking through cafes and snatching up laptops.
Oh, really? Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I don't know, it's apocryphal or it's, you know, lit, you know, I don't know how often that really happens. But no, I mean, between the kind of petty crimes around iPhones and iPods and just kind of like the identity theft then of the people who stay logged in all the time. Can you imagine, like, once more people are taking their stuff on the road in the open, what's going to be involved in that? I don't know. That's just my opinion anyway. I think people are way too loosey-goosey with that stuff.
Exactly the reason why something like Back to My Mac is going to be that much more important as the years go by. The ability to simply keep everything in one location that I think is safe and hopefully have such a secure way of connecting to it that I won't want to have multiple copies of it floating around the world.
Exactly. It would be like, I mean, what is this? The equivalent of what? Like having your life savings in your bag everywhere you go. Like, right. Wouldn't you rather have like some kind of a trusted source that says, okay, all that money's still in this one place. You know what I mean? It's nuts to carry that stuff around.
Who does our security podcast, was at RSA last week, the big security convention in San Francisco. And he said the essentially the mood at RSA was, it's over. We've lost. And there are so many hacks. There are so many exploits out there that there's nothing you can do about it. And in fact, we've kind of started to see that even on the Mac side with that, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the Pwn to Own Mac contest. Yep. Where the guy used a somewhat unknown exploit, but it was able to surf to a hacked website in Safari and infect the machine and own it. And it's really endemic in Windows, and I think it's just a matter of time before it's endemic in the Mac. And essentially, there's not much you can do about it. You can download the patches when they're available, but the hackers are way ahead of the patch cycle.
Yeah, and well, think about the way that your bank accounts are protected, or the way that your credit cards are protected. They are chiefly protected by the virtue of the fact that your credit card company will reimburse you for losses. I mean, they are not willing to really. I was sort of pleasantly freaked out last week in Colorado. There's a comic book shop. Let's give a shout out to Time Warp Comics and on 28th Street, yo. And I shop there exactly once a year. And as soon as I presented them with the clerk with a credit card he'd never seen before, he asked for the ID immediately. He asked me to take off my sunglasses so he could, you know, compare the faces. The idea that someone is actually
there—that is so rare.
Exactly. It was like I was like, you're in the rhythm of like not expecting it. So he actually like I had to pause a second to realize he wasn't just trying to get me to buy, trying to get me to sign up for the frequent buyer club. But I was like, yes, absolutely here.
Yeah. Yeah. my mom for like. Like 10 years, my mom, 10 or 15 years, my mom has not signed the back of any credit card she's got. And she always puts in big letters across the entire white area, ask for identification. Right?
Does that ever happen?
Like one out of 20 times. Yep. They'll just look at the back. They'll see there's letters on there. Did you see the back? Do you want to ask me for... And they're like, oh, no, that's okay. That's cool.
Yep. I do the same thing. I say check ID instead of signing it. Somebody told me to do that. It's meaningless.
Well, it's terrible. I checked into a really ritzy hotel like a couple months ago, and I nearly had to throw a ball of paper at the clerk who I was checking in with because handed them the credit card so they could, you know, charge incidentals. And rather than like keeping it like someplace as she's typing things in, she just left it right up there, right there on top of the computer, face up where everybody could just, you know, all the people checking in could just get a look at my credit card number. And I'm like, could you please just flip that?
That's a really good point, Andy, because if you remember when ATMs, I think what helped ATMs catch on, well, let me go back a little bit. If you remember what, 76, 77, 78, when the very first ATMs that I can remember started appearing, people's reaction was, what, four digits between me and all of my money? Like, you're crazy. But you're absolutely right. They kind of assuaged that with this idea that we'll indemnify a certain amount of that risk for you. But, you know, another way to put it maybe is like, yeah, they'll cover you for that $500, but not cover you for the exact $500 that you think. You know what I mean? It isn't like, so in other words, that's $500 from a big pool that they can afford to lose versus all your like particular to you specific data that gets lost, which is a very different affair. Does that make any sense? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's easy enough to say, we'll take care of this thing that's easy enough for us to replenish in the generic, but who's going to undersign the security of like all your personal stuff?
Right.
Ah. Well, it was depressing to me because there's, you know, I asked, we actually, you know, I did this interview for the radio show where there are a lot more kind of novice users. And I said, well, okay, great. What can we do? And he said, nothing. He said, you know, nothing. Patch, you know, do patch windows, you know, do all the things we've always told you to do, but you're still, there's nothing you can do. You're still screwed. So that's goodness. One of the things I noticed when I was in Australia is a lot of iPhones. They're very popular down there. Of course, they're all hacked. But while I was down there, there was kind of a semi-announcement. An Apple source said Vodafone might well be the carrier for the Australian market, and that once it's launched, they will sell them unlocked.
Hmm. So how much does a flight...
Is that the first time that's happened?
Really? No, it happened in, was it France? Somewhere in Europe, they were required to sell them unlocked. I think it was in France.
Mm. But did anybody ever successfully get an unlocked iPhone out of France?
No.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, that, well, maybe, I don't know. You know, one quarter of all the iPhones apparently are being used unlocked in China.
No, China, for God's sakes, one quarter, 99% of all copies of Windows XP are being sold
For $4.
On five and a quarter inch floppies, for God's sake.
The Business Standard says that they're going to, first of all, they'll be the HSDPA iPhone, the new high-speed iPhone. It'll be around $700. It'll be expensive. But that should be interesting. That's so, you know, once, now, they didn't announce the high-speed 3G iPhone while I was gone, did they, by any chance?
No, but Brother Mossberg was very certain we're going to see one very soon.
Yeah.
And we know it's going to be like by the summer, but I was surprised to see a date of within, he was claiming within 60 days, which surprised me because it would seem like a lot of things have to happen really quickly and very publicly in order to make the next 60 days. But, you know, Walt is Walt for a good reason.
Well, I think Apple pulls him aside and says, hey, Walt, I mean, don't you think if he's saying that, it's because Apple's asked him to say that?
I have really great amount of trouble assuming that anything that Walt says is not true. That doesn't mean that I don't internally think, well, gee, we're used to seeing a certain timeline that happens starting 90 days out, and we haven't started.
Don't we have to do an FCC approval process and all that stuff?
Right. But again, Walt is not the sort of Walt is not. Who is that really, really unfortunate old school journalist who, like a day after 9/11, said, oh, I've got documentary evidence that it was an inside job planned all along because of some documents he got off the Internet. I mean, it's not one of those. He's not one of those kinds of journalists. I don't think he would say something like that unless he knew it was true. But also, he wouldn't guess at it, but also he wouldn't commit to actually saying it in public unless he felt as though he was not only was the information correct, but that he was free to say it in public.
How widespread is HSDPA now? I know AT&T is trying to roll it out as fast as they can, but is do you have it in Boston?
We do have it in Boston. It's not 100% reliable. I do have a couple of the AT&T handsets that use the network. And whereas, I mean, this is where you see at least part of the argument that Mr. Jobs was making last year, that whereas I can get an edge connection anywhere in New England except for Vermont,
right?
I can't get the super high speed connection on these other phones unless I'm in, you know, places where I can probably get free Wi-Fi
automatically. Yeah, we have it in San Francisco, too, but I think the same exact issue. It's interesting. I used HSDPA in Australia. Telstra. Oh, man, I feel so sorry for the people in Australia. Telstra, which was owned by the Australian government and has been kind of privatized, although the government still owns half of it, is absolutely, appallingly greedy. And I mean, it's kind of stunning. There are competitors, but they're all small players. I mean, when you have a government run, you know, Internet service provider and telco, it's kind of hard to compete against them. And Telstra is very anti-competitive. You know, if you want to be an ISP and you want a DSL switch in Telstra's offices, they apparently make it very difficult for you. But you know what they do? This is, you know, they have very low data caps, like 500 megabytes a month. Megabytes a month.
Wow. I would go through that pretty quickly.
Like in a day.
Yeah.
It's as somebody who produces content that's big that you want to download, and I'm planning to do more video, and I'm sure you guys are too. That's not good news. That's ridiculous. It means Australia can't afford to download our stuff.
Maybe you're just a little fancy. Maybe you need to start thinking about, you know, 16, two frame per second, you know.
16 kilobit versions of the show. We actually do a couple of shows with 16 kilobit versions.
Your special Tamagotchi-oriented version of the podcast.
I just feel bad for them. Anyway, but we were using HSDPA on the road, and sometimes it was quite fast. Sometimes it was not. It wasn't noticeably better than EVDO. It was about the, it seemed like it was about the same.
Yeah, that's where you get into the question of, I don't mind having high speed available to me if it's pretty much free, or if it, I don't have to pay that much more for it.
Well,
but if
pay.
I start, if my monthly data charge goes up from $20 to $65, and I can't rely on getting access to that high speed whenever I need it, wherever I need it, you know, that's going to make me wonder why I'm bothering.
We maxed out every card we had in about 5 days. And I maxed out my connection. Because, by the way, it's not just downloads, it's uploads too. And I was uploading pictures and video. I maxed out in a day. And then they charge you like 10 cents a megabyte. It's outrageous.
It's amazing, though, because it really brings you back around to a different time. I was having this conversation with someone the other day where, you know, if you've been around this stuff for, you know, a few years, you think about, you know, really how disruptive something like YouTube is. I remember the first time that I tried to put up a video on my website, I output something in Premiere at what I thought was a pretty modest, you know, back in the day when you'd have like these little postage stamp sized videos that were basically glorified animated GIFs, but still I could blow through my bandwidth for the month,
yeah,
you know, in a day,
yeah,
with hardly any visitors at all.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to think about how, even though we certainly are where we should be with bandwidth in this country, it is still amazing to think about the change that all you can eat bandwidth has made possible.
And we pay more here than in a lot of countries. But I mean,
oh God,
we're probably,
is it Korea or Japan where they get the
just high speed for nothing?
I mean, get the equivalent of a T3 for like $10 a month or something.
Yeah, I know. We're kind of in the middle of the pack. There's worse. Australia's one, and there's a lot better. Scandinavia, Asia. So a couple of attacks on iTunes lately. First, at AdTech in San Francisco, Chief Digital Officer at NBC Universal, George Klyavkov, says, get this, if you look at studies about MP3 players, especially leading MP3 players, I wonder what that is, and what portion of that content is pirated, and think about how that content gets onto that device, it has to go through a gatekeeping piece of software, which would be a convenient place to put some anti-piracy measures.
Arr.
NBC implying they would put their shows back on iTunes if Apple would just figure out some way to prevent piracy.
Which kind of piracy? They're making this into MP3s piracy, or checking to make sure this got bought from somewhere?
Is that
the idea? They want some kind of Windows like DRM to make sure every bit of media has been paid for? Is that what they're advocating?
They're not. They don't. He didn't exactly say, but he says, we'd love to be on iTunes. It has a great customer experience. This is NBC. Remember, they pulled all their stuff off.
Hulu.
They went to Hulu. Yeah. We'd love to figure out a way to distribute our content on iTunes. We don't want them stuff pirated. You know, the Hulu prevents
it
by
being
Flash, right?
We would be more than willing to buy your carriage if you would just make room for a buggy whip.
Yeah, I mean, that's stupid. When I missed an episode of House after the Super Bowl, it was just as simple. And I tried to do, you know, I went onto iTunes to see if I could buy it, couldn't buy it, went to see if there's going to be repeated anytime soon. When I finally decided that my God-given right to find out exactly why that Arctic researcher was suddenly crashing superseded the copyright holder's right to make money off of it, it took me all of 20 minutes to get a really good MP4 off the internet.
Yeah.
And that had nothing to do with Apple's involvement. I mean, there's obviously got to be something else going on behind NBC, because as much as we love to say that, oh, these people are clueless, oh, they're stuck in an old paradigm, they really know what the numbers are, and they know pretty much what they're doing. When they say something that's on the surface looks that stupid, it's usually because they're trying to get some sort of other concession out of the company.
Yeah, but they also they want Apple to be participate in their little sad Vichy government, right? They're still looking for anybody. And I hate to sound this cynical and this obvious, but I think they just want people to keep pretending that this game that they're playing makes any sense at all.
Right.
And the more people, if they can get Apple to like basically pay lip service to this incredibly broken model that they're trying to still run with, then that makes them look like they're not insane. And I think that's all.
Very eloquent. I think you're exactly right.
Oh, they're not necessarily insane. Hulu is a big benefit to users.
Why would they pull it off there to go on iTunes?
Hulu works initially. I think in the long run, though, people don't sit and watch stuff on Hulu.
I love Hulu. I have nothing against
you. You sit and watch stuff on Hulu? Yeah.
I don't.
I love Hulu, but I don't use it.
My wife, whom I love, will not watch anything on a computer screen.
Well, most people won't.
I love her. So I'm trying to set up a Mac Mini. When I get my Mac Mini, which I did buy, set up, I will do that. But I'm talking about something different. I'm talking about, like, you know, I don't think these companies are acting in their own best self-interest right now. based on my observation, they don't have inside information of these companies, but what I can continue to gather is that as long as they can pretend like this little game of theirs is going to make any sense,
The music industry,
despite
did.
The way the technology is killing them, they're going to, and you know, Andy, you know, you're a good soul to even like sweat that. There are so many people out there who are 20 years old that are not going to watch TV in real time. They're not going to sit through a commercial, and they're never going to buy anything on iTunes. I stand
and
by
that. And they know how to use BitTorrent.
That's all, you know, it's all you need to use. And unless they can find some way to like move further up the food chain to choke this stuff, they're dead in the water. It's a matter of how long we keep the feeding tube.
I had this conversation with the photographers. This one's really close to home. Now these guys make photos for a living, and you know, it's very hard for them to accept the fact that once stuff's out there, it's going to be out there. And you can't control it. You can't. There's no digital watermarking technology. Nothing you can do. It's gonna be gone. And so you have two choices. Not, you know, you can put little thumbnails up and nobody will ever see your pictures or appreciate them. Or you can say, okay, this is the way it is. Let's find a business model that works in the world where bits go flying out of your control.
At the baseline, though, every single person who's producing content, and I include myself amongst this.
We're in the same boat.
Anybody who's making stuff and putting it on the internet to a certain degree, I'm sure this will come back to bite me when I write a book. But
I wrote books that were pirated immediately, 13
of them. But the thing is, if you never change your basic point of view about this and you continue to feel that there's a basic disparity and that you have the right to beat the crap out of anybody who doesn't use your stuff in exactly the way you wish they would for the amount of money that you wish they would, you need to get a time machine because your time is over. And if you can't live with that, then you shouldn't put stuff on the internet. You should open up a little shop somewhere and make people come there and sit and watch your TV where you can watch them.
Right.
Because instead, why not see the incredible opportunities of having an audience that goes out of their way. I mean, look at Andy. Andy loves this TV show so much that he goes out and does something that I sense he's not necessarily comfortable doing. Why would you not provide an opportunity for somebody to spend a little money to be your fan?
Right.
That's just so stupid to me.
Right.
Well, it's one thing to say that, and it's one thing to say, well, let's start giving things away, let's acknowledge the new model, and it's another thing when you have about 5,000 people who are in your employ whose ability to make their mortgages are relying on your ability to make a good decision about how to monetize your content.
But that's not the way free market works.
But what I'm saying, Merlin, is that you can't really expect NBC or me personally to by default say every content that I create, I'm just going to put it out, no DRM, no charge, no nothing, and hope that money comes my way eventually.
That's a straw man. That's not what I said at all. Huh? I want to respond to that.
Okay. Well, I'll admit, Merlin, I'm having trouble really following your argument. I mean,
my argument is that for the last 80 to 100 years, anybody who's created content has had the law and physicality on their side in such a way that they held the high card in any kind of business relationship. And they were able to define the terms for even the most ridiculous business relationships just because they controlled every aspect vertically. And because now that doesn't exist anymore and that model is broken, I think just saying that you've got a lot of employees is not an excuse to say that your business model works anymore, because it doesn't. And what I'm not saying that you should go out and give everything away. I mean, I'm saying that like in order, I don't know what's going to happen. I am smart enough to look at it and know when it's broken and it's ready to let it die.
That's the challenge, is to figure out a business model that works in this world.
Just because
we
don't know what's perfect doesn't mean we shouldn't point out what's stupid. And I'm not saying you should go work for free or give your stuff away. What I am saying is that these photographers, I'll just say particularly with photographers, if your idea of being a photographer on the internet is putting up a low res version of your photo with your copyright pasted all over every square inch of the photo, you fundamentally don't understand and maybe even shouldn't have permission to be on the internet because you fundamentally don't understand.
I was very sympathetic with them, and I understand their conundrum, and it's the same conundrum that everybody has to deal with. How do we find a new business model that works in the age where, you know, it's you want to get your content out there?
What I'm really objecting to, Merlin, is the idea that inability to want to simply knuckle under and do what has to be done to if I'm misinterpreting what you were just saying there, please correct me, but you really can't attach that label that you have no right to participate because you just don't get it. I can see this from so many different angles myself. There is a couple of pictures that I took last week from the Conference on World Affairs of a couple of like leading, you call them leading skeptics, you know, James Randi and the bad astronomer Phil Plait. And of course, happily sent copies. Phil's a pal of mine, so I sent him copies. He put them on the website, and some of the people who commented were not upset, but they were a little, oh Jesus, too bad that Anatko released it as Creative Commons, but he also added the no derivs tag. That's too bad, because I would love to like modify it. And of course, it's my friend Phil, and it's his portrait, so his fans should have the ability to modify it however they want. And so, of course, I released a new version of it without that tag on it. But that's usually my prerogative as a photographer, not because I don't get it, but because I don't want, if we have...
Nobody denies it's your prerogative.
I'm saying that we have bloggers who are making lots and lots of money, and whereas they have the opportunity to, if I were a commercial photographer, to pay me for my work a very small amount of money that's not going to really affect their bottom line, right. Or they could simply, right-click, save the JPEG, go into Windows Paint and say, he's a bottom pirate, and say, I've made a modification to that. So that basically, that's my free speech modification to the thing.
And I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. I'm not saying that you shouldn't pursue people that break your stuff. My stuff gets reused 1,000 times a day on the internet. Well, not 1,000 times a day. I'm exaggerating, but I mean,
it gets
thank
stolen.
God.
It gets stolen.
Yeah, absolutely. No, my stuff is stolen every single day, and there's nothing I can do about it. And it damages me. It damages me because it dilutes my brand, and it damages me because it actually hurts PageRank. It does all kinds of things to damage me. But you know what? The problem with the human condition, according to one Buddhist parable, is that we get shot in the heart with an arrow, and all we want to do is sit there and figure out what brand of arrow it is and where it came from, instead of trying to figure out how to get the arrow out. And so what I'm trying to say is I can't do anything. If I'm going to be on the internet, I need to make my peace with the fact that I no longer control every single thing that I do. And if I need to control what I'm saying to you, Andy, and I'm saying that you're saying this, but if a person says, I need to control all this and make sure nobody ever draws pee-pees on my face, then maybe that shouldn't be on the internet, because you can't control what happens. That's where we are.
That's very true, but that's at the wrong step of the decision process. I'm thinking more of NBC. Imagine they've got three plates in front of them. One plate is iTunes sales. And here's a cartoon-like little pile of money, and here's how much money they expect to make over 1 year by selling things via iTunes. The middle plate contains how much money they intend to make both directly and indirectly by having their own site, in which they have some sort of measure of control over who gets to download it, i.e. nobody, where they can use it, that sort of thing. And then you have plate number three, which is empty, and it says, look, trust us, this is the way things are going to go. If you release this as an open MP4, you don't have to release it at HD quality, but just release it as a 320 by 240 MP4 that people can load on any device. We are hopefully telling you that the new model is that you will get fans that will want it in a better format and will buy the DVDs and will become better, more regular viewers, and you will get more money off of the streams that do provoke revenue. It's hard to get people past the sight of that initial empty plate. What I'm really objecting to is, and it's not really so much against you, so much as the frequency with which we hear the phrase, oh, these guys just don't get it. Sometimes they do get it. They get it far, far too clearly that their revenue streams are going down, 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 down. And when you're down to your last dollar, you want to defend that last dollar as best you can.
Well, but I think what Merlin's saying, and certainly is what I'm saying, is the way to defend it is not to hang on to the bitter end to DRM and broken business models, but to look for a way to make a living. Maybe there isn't. And if there isn't, then okay, hold on to your broken business model. But I think
I'm struggling not to use an example that's like socially objectionable, because there's a really good socially objectionable example I could use.
Well,
but
go ahead and use
let's
it.
Say, let's say for the sake of argument that you had an industry that was based very heavily on what has now been regarded as not only an illegal, but an unethical treatment of other people.
Are you saying prostitution, slavery?
Let's say you had like a sugar farm.
Okay, you're making rum.
And you know the thing is, after society starts to change in a certain way and the technology changes, let's be even less controversial. Let's talk about the cotton gin. Let's talk about anything that fundamentally changes the means of production and how stuff can be created and moved around. I mean, it isn't like every time shipping was misplaced by trains, or trains were misplaced by airlines, or airlines were misplaced by a more efficient system of using. It's not like you get to just, you can keep using your old model and keep demanding that people follow it, but I don't think that's the
at
smart
some point
business
you're
decision.
Stuck with piano rolls.
And anyway,
I don't want to
Andy, that James Randi photo, insanely great.
Oh, let me
that
see.
That is like
is
one of my favorite
Flickr?
Photos. I saw it on Flickr. I put it on my blog with attribution. But it's a terrific photo of James Randi. He should use that for publicity. It's fantastic.
Were you at a James Randi concert?
No, I was at the conference on world affairs at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and he and I were speakers. And I was every year there's like 100 people from all different walks of life invited. And every year when the speakers list gets released like a month and a half ago, I sort of mentally check off, okay, the following two people, I'm going to try really hard not to behave like a jackass around. Because, you know, and James Randi was one of them because I've been a fan for a while. So
I love him.
It was cool. I got to spend a lot of time hanging around with him, partly because he has an iPhone that he both approves of and disapproves of in many ways. I was able to counsel him through many crises of faith. one of which was the simple ability that he can't just take it to Germany and start using it in Germany.
Well, I mean, he can, but just at a price.
Right, exactly. We're talking about the premium of unlocked phones, and that's might be an increasingly itchy hurdle for Apple to get over.
Oh, that is a good picture of him. I'm seeing it on Flickr now. That's a great
for anybody
picture.
Who's new to the world of James Randi, his last name is spelled R-A-N-D-I. And for a little bit of fun, do a YouTube search on James Randi and last name Geller, G-E-L-L-E-R. For
I showed my daughter the one on homeopathy, which was fantastic.
And his psychic surgery one where he acts like he's taking out tumors.
Yeah.
He was one of my, when I was a kid, I think he was one of my favorite guests on The Tonight Show.
He is a magician who has lately taken to debunking. He's a skeptic. He's debunking all sorts of crazy.
Psychics and telekinesis.
Yeah. Really good stuff. Bending spoons. And that is a good, that is a wonderful picture. Yeah.
So we're all screwed, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've had this conversation before. I think we'll have again, I bring it up because you still got people like this guy at NBC saying we could solve the problem with more DRM.
Okay, well, can I make one? Well, I'll promise you this will be my last statement.
Okay,
it just occurred to me that this is probably what I'm really getting at. We were making these exact same arguments years ago before the iTunes Store. Saying, well, all these record companies are doing a bad job. They're trying to make music available online, but they're doing it in such a way that removes so much control for so much freedom from the user that's doomed to failure. It's going to be, it's going to be file sharing basically for the rest of the life. That's going to be how you distribute music. Then Apple came out with a way saying, what if we give people an opportunity, a way that they can purchase music? There will be DRM on it, but we will make it so attractive, this method of getting music, that it will actually be more popular than stealing music. And you can certainly make the case that I've seen some numbers that actually say that iTunes has made significant inroads against people actually downloading music that they would have bought had they had the opportunity.
Well,
but it doesn't mean that the idea of having DRM on a piece of content or somehow getting people to fork over some money is a terminal dead end sort of way of selling.
Remember
stuff.
That NBC wasn't happy with the DRM at iTunes. They wanted what they're saying is it's not enough. It's not aggressive enough. And we're going to put our stuff on Hulu until Apple creates a better anti-piracy solution. So you're right. It's possible to do kind of less intrusive DRM. In fact, one of our sponsors, Audible, uses DRM, and it's like iTunes. It's fairly unobtrusive. It's not ideal, but you're right. I mean, there are degrees. It's not black and white. But clearly NBC wants it to be a little bit stronger.
Yes.
And also 15 states in the District of Columbia say they want their money. They want sales tax on digital downloads, including iTunes. Wisconsin and your state, Andy, Massachusetts, have formed groups to study iTunes taxes. What do you think?
What happened in the past? I remember that. Do you remember a few years ago, wasn't California was trying to do something?
They still are. In fact, file your taxes this year? There was a little checkbox on your California state return saying, did you buy anything online? Fork over the sales tax.
The enormous Amazon Prime box.
Yeah. That
was a big dust up a few years ago when that first started happening, though, right?
Now, Mike, I imagine I'm not going to say what I did, but I imagine there's widespread fraud on that. Are you going to fess up and say, I bought $20,000 worth of stuff on Amazon. Here's my 7.5%.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
It seems like just an unmanageable way of collecting that tax. I mean, here in the beloved Commonwealth of Massachusetts, we started a new thing where to encourage people to get health coverage. If you don't get health coverage, you no longer get your personal exemption from tax. But if you do have coverage, you have to fill out this 2-page form to explain exactly where you got your coverage and why you didn't and that sort of thing. And that gave me absolute fits 2 days ago. And that was just a simple 2-page form to explain, do you have coverage? Do you not have coverage? If you don't have coverage, could you afford it? And that was it. if I had to go through all of my charges over the year and try to figure out which stuff applied to this tax, which did not, and then apply the right tax rate to it, I've got the fake beard and the fake passport waiting and a flight out to anywhere.
It is controversial. In fact, in California, the Revenue and Taxation Committee defeated the proposal. They had a download tax bill. And see, part of it is that you can't collect the tax unless the business has a physical presence in the state. So the fear is that if California passes a download tax, companies will just move out of California, costing them more in the long run.
Oh, so you would see that fought out at a state government level.
Yeah.
It's not federal.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, within the government, different groups would stand to benefit quite
differently.
Absolutely, yeah. Taxation and technology, they really will just amuse the hell out of you. I was talking to some people who work at Yahoo who telecommute, and which is great because these two people, they essentially are the Denver field office of Yahoo. You know, so if you ever, I joked when I posted the picture on Flickr that if you ever hear that the Denver field office has relocated to the Cayman Islands, it doesn't mean they're doing some weird tax thing. They just want to do some scuba diving as husband and wife. But they're telling me about how difficult it is that they actually had an employee. I hope I'm not misquoting this, but Yahoo had some employee who wanted to in Minnesota, who wanted to telecommute, and it cost the company a huge amount of money because according to archaic tax laws, if a company has any full-time employee living in state, they have to essentially they're entitled to a certain amount of revenue that was generated by that employee in the state. And so now at Yahoo and other tech companies, if you say you want to telecommute, they ask, well, where do you want to live? Because there's some states that are now off the boards because it will just cost them way, way too much money.
That's so funny.
Yeah,
I used to be a work-at-home employee years ago where I was, and it was for this really kind of old guard, company, and it was an internet company, but the people who ran it, operations people, had been around, for 30 years. And I remember one day going out to my mailbox and there was one of those workman's comp posters where, it's like, well, if you want to file a claim for workman's comp, and he demanded that I put it up in my office. So for a long time, for a year, I had a workman's comp poster in my bedroom. I'm surprised I didn't have to do get the cleanliness rated.
I was going
to
say, yes. What's your sanitation rating?
Oh, it would not be good right now. It would not be good at all.
Time to write my column. Better put on my hairnet.
What percentage of rat feces will we allow in the column this week?
Depends on the column.
Let's let the readers tell us how much rat feces we have.
let's wrap this up in a second with our picks, but before we do, it's Audible time. Did you guys do Audible commercials last week and the week before?
I believe that we did.
You are good. Thank you.
We are devoted fans of Audible.
Well, we are.
We would
indeed
be doing this whether or not we were sponsored or not.
I did a little kind of impromptu meetup. I did two, actually. One at the Sydney airport, about 15 people showed up, and then one in Hobart, Tasmania. Another, I'd say maybe 10 people showed up. And I asked the 10, I said, I know in Australia you don't have the same selection of books, but are you? And they were all Audible members. So I think at some point we've now saturated. But if you're not a member, if you're one of the few Twit listeners who's not a member, go to audible.com/MacBreak and sign up because you'll get a credit toward a free book. And if you are out of the U.S., you should check first to make sure that book is available for download. It's different in every country because the publishers are different in every country. So the rights, it's complicated. That's another, don't get me started on globalism, because that's another issue entirely. Someday, the world will all be one. But until then, make sure that the book you want is available. We got two recommendations. I'm going to let you both do recommendations, guys, starting with Andy Iannacco.
Okay, this is a recommendation that I have. This is an audio book that I got out of sheer laziness. One of the great nonfiction books really of the past 100 years has been Peter Ackroyd's book about the history of the city of London. It's not treated like here's a book about the history of London. They actually call it London: The Biography.
Wow.
Because that's the way that he really paints a picture of this living, breathing, dynamic thing that's located at the bottom of this landmass. And he really digs deep down into the histories about how one event leads into another event, how daily life in the city is still being affected by a fire that, you know, occurred centuries earlier, how a simple decision about where a certain property line was going to be drawn decided how the money system went 100 years later. It really is interesting. However, it's one of those books that, goodness, if they're building a new school and they forgot to order a ceremonial cornerstone, you can buy this book, set it in the concrete. It's about the same size and weight. So it's one of those books that during a trip to London, I actually got interested in the history of the place, bought this book. I think I read the first 20 pages and I just never got through it again. But then I started buying the Audible audiobooks. It's so big that it's actually chopped up into three different volumes. So what I'm recommending is probably going to be London, the biography, the volume entitled Street Life and the People.
Is that the best one of the bunch?
I'm recommending it because it's the most recent one I've listened to. I haven't gotten to the third one yet. I've heard all the way through that one and the section about districts and suburbs. Districts and suburbs will really appeal to you if you're one of those people who just loves the idea that, oh, there's a reason. The reason why there's only two. Let me go into Boston history because it happens to be one of my favorite little stories about the development of the city of Boston. That in the old part of the city, there is only two streets that intersect at right angles. Everything else is like a big former walkway or former pathway. It's Rope Street, and Rope Street crosses over Church Street at a right angle. And there's a story behind it because Church Street, as you can guess, used to be the route that people used to take to get to church. However, to take that direct route, they used to have to cut through some guy's property. He used to get sick and tired of people cutting through. So when church was happening, he would string a rope across the path so you couldn't really drive horses across it. So that became Rope Street, cutting across Church Street. So if that's the sort of story that you really like, you will enjoy the book, the volume about districts and suburbs, because once again, it will tell you the history about how communities form and how they build and grow. Street Life will give you a more eye level account of what the city has been like since it was first founded. But you really can't. I don't think there's a loser in this bunch. There are three volumes, and you'll get your first one for free, and you'll probably wind up buying the next two. That's kind of. I bought the first one, not really anticipating that I'd be buying all three, but now I'm nearly done with the second, and I'll probably buy the third, too.
Boy, this sounds good. That sounds really great. London, the biography, Peter Aykroyd. Is it Akroyd?
Yes, exactly like Dan Aykroyd's younger brother.
Oh, is he?
Free trivia. Well, no, it's not. He's not the same person, but Dan Aykroyd does have a younger brother by the name of Peter Aykroyd, I believe.
Oh.
Akroyd is probably the actual piece of information that I was meaning to convey to your listeners. In the midst of giving you Boston history and SNL,
it's the rat holes that make this show. And he also has Shakespeare, the biography. I'll have to check that out, too. That's like 80 volumes, it looks like. It goes on and on. Yes. I can't wait. So there's one recommendation, but that's not the only one because we've got dueling recommendations, Mr. Merlin Mann.
I am currently obsessed with a comedy duo from the UK called Mitchell and Webb, or David Mitchell and Robert Webb. And they are actually, I'll tell you how you'll know them. You'll know them from the not particularly funny UK version of the I'm a Mac commercial.
Oh yeah. 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 And it's not as good as the,
that's not their best material. They, so these are two guys who are, writers, comedians, and they've done a whole bunch of different stuff with radio and TV. Right now, if you have BBC, America, you can watch their wonderful program called That Mitchell and Webb Look. Yep. They had a really funny sitcom that's about to air its fifth season in the UK called Peep Show, kind of an odd couple thing. And they're two just really desperately funny, talented guys. And the one I wanted to mention today is I noticed that because, you know, I'm obsessed, I noticed that Audible has their radio series.
Oh, neat.
Which is called That Mitchell and Webb Sound.
Cool.
Page. And it's a skit comedy, and like a lot of the great British sketch comedy, you're in and you're out in 2 minutes, just zing, very funny, done before a live audience, very enjoyable. If you enjoy, I'm trying to think who they're kind of like. They don't do like terribly, terribly broad characters. A lot of it's just situational humor, but they do characters.
Should
that
I play
are very
a little
memorable.
Bit just so people can hear what it sounds?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, here's a little Mitchell and Webb.
A song about opening a porn mag and finding that your first love is now a nudie model. That would be a surprise, wouldn't it? totally undermines the achievement of having got her nude yourself in the first place.
Get off here.
All those years ago.
Love it.
I just sent you a link to one of my my favorite TV skits that they do. It's called Bronze Age Orientation Day, and it's the day that the two of them, as sort of like very late Stone Age guys, are realizing that the times are changing.
Oh boy.
And they're going to have to go to Orientation Day for Bronze Age to learn how their jobs are going to be made redundant.
That sounds familiar.
it reminds me a lot about Kids in the Hall. If the Kids in the Hall were like not Canadian and only two of them.
Just
the other night on BBC America, they had a real Kids in the Hall type sketch where it's an action TV show starring BMX Bandit and the Summoner of Angels.
That's it. That's Mitchell and Webb.
Right, where one of them is, you know, can do all these really awesome BMX.
The Angel Summoner, yeah.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'll jump my bike over the hallway, do a double flip. Kick the bandits like twice in the jaw with my rear wheel, then leap up on the rear wheel. And meanwhile, the Angel Summoner is, yeah. Or I could summon a horde of warrior angels who could take them all out in like that. Really? No, but your idea is good too.
I'll tell you what. Next time we'll definitely do a plan that uses your BMX skills.
That's, by the way, on this audio as well.
Yeah. If you enjoy them, this would be a great pick for Audible if you enjoy comedy. And I'm in a larger sense, I'm suggesting that you go out and start Googling around for Mitchell and Webb. Tons of their stuff is on YouTube. I post way too much of their stuff on Kung Fu Grip. If you enjoy British comedy, Mitchell and Webb.
I love it. You know, one of the things that Audible has been doing is putting a lot of BBC programming up, audio programming up, which is great, I think. Audible.com. It's more than just books, but it's a great way to listen your way through the great works, the minor works, the comedic works, the pornographic works. It's all there. Audible. I threw that in just, you know.
Oh, boy. We'll fix that in post.
Yeah. The Audible. Well, the reason is, I'm looking for London, the biography, and I found London, 35 Erotic Tales. So I thought, well, that's probably pretty close.
We don't judge. We just want your money.
Audible.com/MacBreak. We love them, and I know you will, too. Check them out. Now it's time. It's pick time among the three of us. Not as many picks as usual. Let's start with Andy Inoko. What do you got for
this,
us?
This one is going to be a callback to January. There is a little item that I picked up at Macworld Expo that was not to be shipping until about now, or rather until March, and I am informed that it is going to be shipping in the next week or two, so I can actually make it a formal pick. Joby's Gorillapod Go-Go, which is proving to be...
Oh, this is the one with the suction cup.
Dancing, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Some of you are already familiar with the eternal majesty of the Gorillapod tripod. This is it. You get it, and it looks like an alien hand because it's a three-leg tripod. But instead of having rigid legs, it's imagine like a finger with about 10 knuckles coated with rubber with ball joints on them. So yes, you can stand it up as a tripod, but you can also essentially turn it into a hand to grab a rail or grab a pole or bend it into any shape that's going to be useful to get your camera pointed in the right way you're going to do it. And this is one of these really wonderfully subtle and brilliant ideas. They thought, well, right now the Gorillapod only works with things that have a tripod mount, i.e. a camera of some sort. What if we were to develop a mounting system so that you could use any device that you want with this tripod system? And so if you buy the Gorillapod Go-Go, you get the compact size Gorillapod. It's about the size of a few pencils lashed together. You can put it in your shirt pocket very easily. And you also get three different clip-on mounts. One of them is a standard tripod mount, so you can use it with your little pocket camera. The other is an adhesive thing that will just stick to the bottom of your iPod or whatever permanently. But the third thing is a really good like inch wide suction cup that really sticks to any smooth, clean surface. It works great with an iPod Touch. It works great with my iPod Nano, and I can't tell you how many different ways I was using it last week in any travel situation. But for instance, I was on American. I was not in the super elegant seat back video section, but I was able to simply, you know, put the suction cup on my iPod Touch, attach it to the Gorillapod, and then bend it into a shape so that it could grip onto the seat back in front of me.
I love this.
So I had seat back video. I was recording all of my all of the sessions that I was doing, and just stick it on the back of my iPod Nano, put my Belkin recorder on the bottom of it, use it as a regular tripod, and it became this beautiful like little broadcasting mic for the thing. A little while earlier, I was it was in the car helping to navigate someplace somewhere, and I did not bring the big complicated glass mounter for my GPS, but I did happen to bring my GPS with me. Again, I was able to just wrap the thing around the visor of the car and turn it into a mount for the GPS. The bottom line is, it's one of those things where you will buy it without any specific use for it, but if you travel with it, you'll be using it 3 or 4 times a day. It's not that expensive. I believe it's like a little less than, I think it's $35. If you already have a GorillaPod of that size, you can buy just the mounting clip set for $11. But you will buy it, you'll put it in your bag, and you'll be using it over and over and over again.
I was surprised to see even some of the professional photographers using carrying GorillaPods with them. And of course, they carry really expensive carbon fiber Gitzo, $800 tripods, but they have the GorillaPod also in there because there's times when it's really useful.
And it looks like the weirdest thing. It looks like you, under no circumstances, would you want to trust a $400 thing to holding this thing up. But nonetheless, you borrow it from somebody and you find out that, good God, it actually will grip very, very securely to anything you have. I do have some pictures of what I've been using it for during the week, like up on my Flickr feed. Guys, I'm gonna send it to you right now so you see. You can see the seatback video.
I posted that on my very weblog or blog because I thought that I saw you enjoying House from your window seat.
There's a back and forth between you two that's just really admirable.
We hardly need you at all, Leo.
Could you just leave the recorder on and just let us know?
I'm just going to take off here because, okay. You two get along so well.
You buy it at Joby.com? Is that where you buy a store?
Yes, it'll be available in retail outlets. If you go to Joby.com, you will see a teaser for it because apparently they're not actually ready to start selling it yet. I'm told that it really, really will start shipping shortly. So their grace period is now up. I feel as though I'm not helping them anymore by not, recommending this thing. I think that the more people get excited about it and get interested in buying it, the sooner they're going to say, well, you know what, guys, stop fighting about whether the little cardboard insert in the back of the package should be blue or should have a picture of a duck or a picture of a swan. People just want to buy this. Please sell it to them.
So let's just to be clear, Joby sells the GorillaPod in a lot of different form factors. You can buy it in a lot of different places, but you're talking about a particular one with the suction cup.
It's called the Go-Go.
It's not just the suction cup. If you really want to permanently mount it on, it's a hot swappable little shoes where you can just take it off the tripod and put it on the tripod. With a suction cup mount, it will stick to anything that has a smooth surface. If you want to use the self-adhesive shoe, you can still remove it from the tripod whenever you want, but of course you'll have that little plastic triangle mounted on the back thing permanently or until you scrape it off. But yeah, it's the GorillaPod Go-Go. It is actually one of their standard GorillaPods with this special mounting, these special mounting adapters that come with it.
Cool. And it's not available yet, but it will be any minute now.
Any second now. I wouldn't hold my breath unless you could hold your breath for more than 4 days or a week. If you can, that might be a good public YouTube it. That might be a good marketing thing for you.
He's turning blue. He's getting bluer. He's really blue now. And yeah, you can take a look at it anyway on the Go-Go Joby site at goby.com and click the Go-Go button under GorillaPod. My pick is actually a game. I like puzzle games. I like my brain being challenged, and I don't really have time. I wish I did, for really elaborate, long games like Halo 3 and, World of Warcraft. I try to play them, but they just take too much of my time, and I got too much to do. So I love the little short games I can play that challenge me, that I could play one level. Like Lemmings. Remember Lemmings? That was so great. You'd solve a level, you'd feel good, you can move on with your life. This is similar. It's called Enigmo. Enigmo 2 is out from Pangea Software. They're the folks that do Nanosaur. Remember Bugdom used to come with Max? Nanosaur used to come with Max. Enigmo 2 is $20. It's hard to describe. It's kind of like you have these little liquid drops and you've got to pilot them by cleverly placing bouncers and droppers and sliders and accelerators and sponges, and then you solve the problem. You have a time limit. The faster you do it, the more points you get. There are 70 levels. 20 of them are for kids, which I think is great because it teaches kids logic and kind of physics too. And it has a level editor. Now it's $20. And the reason I thought of it is because the new Mac Heist has just started. And it's one of the items in Mac Heist. So you can buy Enigmo 2 for $20. For $50, you could get that Bugdom 2, Nanosaur 2, X-Slimmer, Rightroom, Wallet, Overflow, iClip, Devon, Think Personal, Cover Sutra, Cha-Ching, Awaken, and Overview. Those are the packages in the Mac Heist bundle this time around. Some of these are repeats from the last bundle, so if you already bought a Mac Heist bundle, you may be less motivated to get involved with that. And you remember we had the pro and con on Mac Heist before with the Mac Heist guys and from Barebones Software, we had Rob on. And I think our conclusion, correct me if I'm wrong, was that, you know, it's up to the developers if they want to participate in this. It's certainly a good deal for the users. And these are 12 packages for $50, or just get Enigmo yourself for 20 if that's all you want. But a fun, fun time waster. That's my pick of the week. Merlin Mann?
Apple sometimes figures out what it really wants to do to make something better by learning from applications that they borrow from, or you could put it less generously. I think one that they will eventually borrow from that I am loving right now is called Time Machine Editor.
Mm.
And boy, I don't know, the 1 hour time machine setting, basically Time Machine is the Leopard's backup solution that lets you kind of theoretically seamlessly backup the stuff on your drive incrementally. So you can roll back to a certain date in a certain folder or what have you. It's great. I use it. I didn't initially think it was very useful. I now really like it and use it. Side tip, if you're going to use Time Machine, be careful about what you choose to backup. Maybe leave out stuff that's extremely heavy in terms of, you know, gigabytes if you don't need to back it up. But it's great. The trouble is that there's no way that I'm aware of without a non-GUI change to change how often it does the backing up for you. And which can, if you're like me and you got a lot of stuff moving around, you end up, it feels like you're backing up all the time. And that does start, if you start watching your CPU usage, you see that a lot of cycles are going toward different kinds of file sync. And so it's nice, this thing, Time Machine Editor, this is a free app that allows you to go in and does exactly one thing. It lets you go in and say how often you want Time Machine to back up. So you could say, I want it to be every 4 hours. I want it to be once a day at 2 a.m. And there's a couple little bits you can flip to say back up when disks are mounted, back up when it wakes from sleep, and so on. Anyway, basically one very simple app that fixes one kind of annoying problem. It's free. It's available at timesoftware.free.fr/Time Machine Editor, one word. Or you could just Google Time Machine Editor, one word.
Cool. I think that's great. Time Machine is such a good idea. And then, but for people who are more advanced, just so frustrating. So I think anything that
it is, and man, yeah, and you enter that whole look with the whole space thing. What do you think about that?
It's kind of a waste of effort. I don't use it.
Yeah, it's weird. It's kind of like in its own little Mac world, isn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah, it is. I am in Mac space.
Same with Spotlight. Spotlight kind of doesn't really live where you'd expect it to on your Mac.
Right.
Like it doesn't really operate like an application
or
anything.
It kind of violates, I hate to say it, but it violates one of the fundamental rules of Macdom from day one, which is not to be modal.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of a Mac is you don't go into modes. You know, Emacs is the classic modal. You either are editing or moving, and you can't do both. And so in response to that, I think in the earliest days of the Mac, and Jeff Raskin probably gets most credit for this, the idea was there are no modes. You know, everything is just there. It's in a window and you can do anything. And boy, you couldn't get more modal than Time Machine. You have to go into a backup mode. And I think that's exactly what you're
feeling. I would not, there's a part of me that I know they're really married to that whole goofy looking, you know, spacey leopard look, but it would not surprise me a lot to see the look
away
and even functionality.
Yeah.
Well, to see it change, to see it become more like, you know, a regular Mac app, because it feels very gimmicky to me right now.
Yeah, I agree.
But it does work. It works great. And I've seen some novel uses for it lately. I mean, one that I use it for, obviously, is, and let's be honest. I mean, do you really need every directory incrementally backed up every hour? I mean, maybe, if you're doing a lot of development and that's your only way of controlling source, which would be nuts, that's probably good. But, you know, for all kinds of really unexpected stuff, I'll tell you where I use it is preferences. If I've accidentally messed up my OmniFocus file, I'll frequently roll back with that.
Oh, what a good idea.
Yeah, any kind of .plist thing where you've messed something up.
Yeah.
I saw somebody the other day mentioning it's great for if you screw up a CSS file.
How do you
file.
Do that? Do you have to actually go back to the plist folder? And
you go to wherever the file is that you want to roll back to. So you go in the Finder, you go to that, you select that file, open Time Machine, the magic happens, and your screen opens up in space! And then and so that will remain selected, and then you just roll back. And what I do is I generally set the window so that I can see how many K it is, what the file size it is. And I look for a different file size and a date that satisfies
clever.
It. And it's pretty neat. Then when you hit the roll back to that, you hit restore. And then that slowly goes away and comes back to the Mac. And just basically, essentially, all it really does is paste that file into that window.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
You're set. But yeah, CSS.plist, versions of graphics. Like if you're like me and you get really fast and loose, like sloppily changing, save as, final version 3. Like there's all times you're like, oh God, I really wish I'd saved this one version of that. That's a great use for that.
Cool.
If they could set that so that eventually, one last thing, I'll shut up. It would be kind of neat if you could be pickier about some folders than others. So I might say, for example, yeah, incrementally back up my downloads folder at 2 a.m. But like, you know, upgrade, you know, incrementally update my desktop like every 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because that's something where there's a lot going on.
That would be, you can't do that with this free time machine.
No, I don't know. I wonder if you can do that. My sense is that there's not that granularity.
It's pretty
definitely
granular.
GUI.
That's a problem with backup software in general. I'm surprised that the only major Mac backup software lets you do something as simple as, look, I don't have a huge hard drive to back stuff up on. Just back up my documents folder, recent purchases, and my contacts and calendars, and leave the rest of it alone. The rest of these apps will let you do that, but you have to point it at the folders you want to keep or tell it to ignore everything except for these 3 or 4 folders. I think it's more of a natural language way backing up that most people really understand.
I use ChronoSync to do that. But you have to point at the folders, but once you set it up, then it's automatic.
I'm just surprised it's not as simple as back up all my documents. I don't care about anything else. Just back up all my documents.
I wish somebody would take I'm almost reluctant to say retrospect because they're a little bit Byzantine in the interface. But I wish somebody would take a retrospect like experience and put that on Unison, where you could do things like, you know, like with Chron, you know how Leo and ChronoSync, you can say this side always wins versus this side, or merge these files if they're text.
Right.
I think bringing that, like that's one thing Unison's great at. Unison will do diff 3 on whatever it's comparing and make the changes based on your rules. But that's non-trivial for an average user to set up because it's all done in a text file. You know, it's all done in a dot, an invisible file at the root at your home directory. So I don't know. Have you guys ever messed with Unison much?
Recommended it. Yeah. And I haven't used it.
It's great for multiple things that you want to sync up. Like if you've got the same folder on 4 different places, you basically identify this host server and then you kind of SSH in and tell it to do its magic. And
it's kind of like ChronoSync. You could probably use it to backup.
It is. It's very powerful and you can say which things to leave in and leave out. And yeah, it's very close to ChronoSync in a lot of ways, but the merging is powerful because if you're working with text files and you're updating them in several different places, it can do some magic to make sure nothing gets clobbered.
Very cool. I want to recommend You Look Nice Today.
Oh, you're so nice to say that.
I love it. Well, hey, any show that has John Hodgman doing the opening.
That's actually not just a guy who sounds a lot like
that's
John
not Hodgman.
Hodgman. It's Dr. Nguyen. And he.
He's
recently arrived from Argentina and he's got a lot of political legal problems.
Let me play a little bit of the beginning.
No, this right now we're tilling the field. We're just basically putting.
Right? Huh? It's not safe for work. I know. Can I play the beginning?
All right.
I don't know. I can't remember. I listened to episode 3B. Let me see if I could skip
you guys. Yeah. And
I think 3B's got a little bit of blue humor in it.
Maybe I better not. Just, you know what? You listen
you
for
know
yourself.
What? You know what,
to, it isn't safe for work. It's for adults, grown-ups. You Look Nice Today. It's Scott Simpson. I don't know how he's even allowed to do this because isn't he like the guy in charge of the podcast section of iTunes?
He does he's a podcast dude there, but we're not going to be featured or anything.
Yeah, you can never be featured. You can't ever be featured.
That's
fine. Yeah. It's kind of sad. You kind of like he could be, except it would be a conflict of interest, so he can't be.
No, it's kind of like a meritocracy, but in reverse. We're really happy to be at the bottom of the pile and let people just kind of accidentally find it and then be disappointed. So we don't really need you. But the star of the show, without equivocation, is our friend Adam, who on Twitter is known as Lonely Sandwich. And Scott Simpson and Lonely Sandwich are the two funniest people on Twitter.
Well,
and so we decided
the three
to do
of
the
you
show.
Are the three of you kind of go. In fact, that's kind of how it started, right? You were all Twitter buddies.
Yeah, we just became friends that way and decided that it was a...
Well, you knew Scott before. Did you know Lonely Sandwich before?
No, I totally met him through Twitter. We call it a journal of emotional hygiene, and it addresses a lot of the painful issues about being an adult.
And I got a question for you. How do you make it sound so good?
Oh, gosh, I just learned the word for this today. I'm doing something with the CVC, and they told me it's called double ending.
Oh, you do double header, double ender.
So what we do is we use Skype as a monitor. We each record locally using either Call Recorder or Audio Hijack, and then we sew it all together.
I should really do that with this show because
You know, though, Leo, you're doing it. We do a fair amount, and by we, I mean Sandwich does all the editing. But it's a lot of work to edit, and for you, I can see why you keep it lighter.
Yeah, we opted for getting it out quicker. In the early days of Twit, we did do multi-enders, but then you got to wait for the guy to upload a massive file.
And you've got the whole weakest link problem, especially a lot of people, even in a tech audience, people you have on your show are not going to have a clue about how to do that kind of thing. And if they screw up, you know,
right.
It kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's youlooknicetoday.com and you should subscribe to it on iTunes. And it's ridiculous and it comes out once a week. And
it is. It's wonderful. And I'm glad you're doing it because frankly, I think you're a master of comedy and I think it's fun to hear you. I shouldn't say it's funny because then people are going to have expectations. Here you have fun. How about that?
If you enjoy, let's put it this way. If you listen to the show and you don't find me completely objectionable, you might try it.
Oh, you'll love it. Oh, you'll love it. And Scott's great. And Sandwich is great. I've been following Lonely Sandwich for a while, too. Who is he?
He's a guy named Adam who does, actually, if you look on Flickr, there's a nice photo of him and you and me at Macworld last January.
We met.
And he's a very, very cool guy who plays ukulele and does video effects on movies in L.A.
Oh, neat.
And he had jazz dancing lessons as a child, and he uses a girly kind of webby poof to clean. He has some toilet issues,
and this is all discussed.
You know, we talk for 3 or 4 hours, and then we edit it down to half an hour.
Oh, do you really?
No, that's ridiculous. Like, who could spend that kind of time?
Sounds like how we do this show, except we don't do the editing. We just sit here and talk and talk and talk. So that is youlooknicetoday.com. Highly recommended. And you can, of course, subscribe to it on iTunes as well. But don't expect it to ever be featured.
Nope.
Andy Iannacco is a featured writer at the Chicago Sun-Times, where he writes about technology and is also the host of his very own site, The Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. At CWOB.com.
Thank you for spelling it correctly. Good luck on my last name.
Yeah, because you can also go
there. Is there a trick for remembering how to spell that? Because I have to Google your name every time I want to type
it. Me too. Google knows how to spell it.
I was flattered when the clerk at my local video store years ago was the only person who could find my name alphabetically, and she finally told me the secret. It was, I have no idea how to spell this guy's name. I-H-N-A-T.
That's good. I-H-N-A-T-K-O. I have no Atco.
Yes.
Oh, I like that.
That's great.
Yes, we have no.
Yes, we have no Anatco. Is it Lithuanian?
My grandparents seemed to think that they had emigrated from Czechoslovakia, and they had paperwork that claimed that they emigrated from Czechoslovakia, and there's no reason to doubt them. However, every time I meet somebody who is an actual Russian person, like not Russian heritage, I'm saying I came from Czechoslovakia today, I'm here for the shopping, and I tell them, they ask the question, I say, oh, no, cannot possibly be Czech name. It's either a Slavic name or is possibly a great Russian name. Cannot possibly. It's as if I told them that my name is Jablankowicz, but no, there aren't any Jewish people or Polish people in my background.
Yeah, interesting.
We'll find it out later.
Someday we'll learn the truth about the Iannaccos. But now we're going to wrap it up. A Mac Break Weekly I hate to say it because I've missed you guys so much and I don't want it to end, but it's broke.
We'll be back
next week, and we'll get Scott and what's his name back? Alex from NAB, where Apple was not, but they were. And I'm going to be on TWIP this week to talk about photography and my journeys down under. And that's about all there is for this show. You may now pee.